Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. James Petras is on today. Listeners know Jim well. He is a distinguished professor emeritus at Binghamton University, New York, a Latin American expert. My goodness, he writes in all parts of the world. He pretty much knows all the regions. His articles are terrific. His books are absolutely must-read. And I believe your latest one, Jim, unless you've got a new one in the offing, the latest one I know about is called The Arab Revolt and the Imperialist Counterattack. Anything new coming out?
Well, Steve, I did do a book on Latin America, which came out in 2011, just at the end of the year, with the title Beyond Neoliberalism, A World to Win. That was published by Ashgate. So that's the latest book, and I'm currently working on another book on empire, imperialism, and popular resistance, which won't be out till next fall. But I'm wrapping it up now.
That will be an exceptional topic to discuss on this program, Jim. I'm doing a follow-up to my Wall Street book, and I have no idea when Diana at Clarity may want to bring it out. She's the boss, and I'm very happy to get along with her and follow her suggestions and so on. But I look forward to it. I imagine sometime before the year is out, that one will come out. And I'm also contributing to a book on Libya, and I'm not sure. I think that's in the queue ahead of mine. I'm not certain when that one's coming out, but I imagine Diana has that one maybe getting close by now. She said she's got lots of stuff in the book, and she asked me to write another chapter on what's been going on in Libya post-Gaddafi, and I did that, and I sent it to her, and we'll see. I look forward to that coming out.
Yes, you're very productive, Steve, and I prioritize your articles when I go through to check my email, make sure I get rid of the spam, and star the articles that I look forward to reading, which always include your wonderful analytical pieces.
Oh, Jim, I mean, every time I see one of yours, I just devour it, absolutely. I seem to be obsessive about what I do, to say the least. I literally can't stop. It's like a bountiful feast every day, Jim. There's so much going on that I feel I want to say something about that. Well, you know, I've only got two eyes and two hands and so many hours in the day, and I'm not a kid anymore, so it's tough to do more than I already am, but it's a fair amount, I must say.
Well, we should get on with our discussion today.
Oh, absolutely.
I suggest we deal first with the photos of this American soldiers taking photos and displaying the body parts of victims of the U.S. occupation in Afghanistan.
Oh, indeed. So I haven't written anything about that, but I have written about the old days, Vietnam and Korea, where instead of taking photos, they cut off fingers and ears and, you know, whatever. I mean, can you imagine bringing that back home as a trophy? What kind of deranged minds do stuff like that? Photos,
well,
I mean, photos are bad enough. Actual body parts.
It's part of a deranged war and deranged leaders. I mean, it's easy to focus on these deluded and psychopathic soldiers, big smiles on their face, waving a dismembered leg or an arm. Or I understand in one photo they took a hand and put the index finger up as if in an obscene display. Now, I think one of the things we should realize that we're entering a dark age. The golden age of capitalism, as we understood it, the period of expansion, of growth, exports and industry, manufacturing, social programs for wars on poverty, 50s and 60s, whatever one thinks of all the injustices and racism and that accompanied that, we were in a period where a certain kind of enlightened capitalism was predominant, along with the terrible war in Vietnam. The great bulk of the American people, at least materially, if not spiritually, were better off, and the citizenship public was very aware and pressing the government to rectify its worst policies, black riots in the big cities, students marching against the war, conscripts in Vietnam protesting, and we got Medicare, Medicaid, and other programs. Now, we see over the last 30 years a complete regression. The social programs are diminishing, even the ones that pre-existed the 60s. Social Security is on the chopping block under Ryan plan of Republicans to privatize it, and Obama talks about slash and burn. Racism is big in a major way, de facto segregation, and worse, people evicted from their houses. We got multiple wars and new wars threatening, and the cultural life is decayed in every way. So that we have, I think, like in the past, we're going from a relatively prosperous and enlightened era, relative, I want to emphasize, into the dark ages. Everything is going in reverse. Living standards are dropping. Wars are multiplying. Leaders are more and more engaged in being bought by lobbyists. Israeli lobbyists are in the United States writing legislation, foreign policy legislation. So we're in the dark ages, and in that context of the dark ages, you get this criminal behavior in the soldiers, not only chopping and taking body parts, but burning the Quran, urinating on dead peasants. And finally, we have this latest thing in Cartagena where the high security Secret Service officials, military, are involved with whores, drinking, debauchery. That's the presidential security system. That's the highest grade military acting in the most scum-ridden way you can imagine. And I think this is a symbolic of the degeneration of not just the Obama administration, but look at the Republicans. They're wallowing in wealth and arrogance. This is a civilizational crisis.
Boy, is it ever, Jim. Is it ever. And a phrase that I like, I've used it in the past in a few articles, and I decided it was a phrase that deserved to be in a title. The criminal class in Washington is bipartisan. Boy, is it. And in this day and age, it really is the most extreme ever. That, you know, the rhetoric can change. We got an election coming up in November, so you know the Democrats damped down the heated Republican rhetoric a little bit, but on all the basic most important things, they are in lockstep together. You know, I'm talking about Wall Street favoritism and corporate favoritism, imperial wars, socking it to the people most vulnerable. They're in lockstep on that kind of stuff. And all of the most extreme policies. I was delighted down in Cartagena, Jim, that Latin countries are not quite as go-along as they were in what you called the golden age of pillage. Hopefully those days are gone, dead, and buried. Boy, I'm sure you hope so too, Jim.
Well, of course, the meeting of the Latin American and North American states ended without any formal signature of a document. They couldn't come to any agreement. Latin America just said to the United States, Cuba has to be recognized as a part of the inter-American system. It's a brother state. They said, let's depenalize drugs and take the profit out of it and the huge earnings of the banks in the United States that the wash at least $30, $40 billion a year in illicit profits. Let's put an end to that. They said, furthermore, that the U.S. has to begin to act as a normal state. It can't go around recognizing military coups. And so we have this breakdown, now official, that for the first time since the Summit of the Americas started meeting under Clinton in 1994, that is no longer a viable organization. It isn't it's the last remaining forum where the U.S. is a joint member. I think it's indicative that the Latin Americans are finally playing an independent role. They're increasingly trading among themselves, more so than with the U.S. The level of integration in Latin America is growing. I think it's another indication of the decay of the U.S. Let me just point out one thing. The U.S. is no longer the main financial instrument in Latin America. China has replaced the U.S. as the principal lender in Latin America, and it's even beginning to play a major role in what used to be called the U.S. backyard, which is essentially the Caribbean. The Chinese are building facilities, sports stadiums, and public offices in the Caribbean. So where does that leave the U.S.? It leaves the U.S. as a whiner and complainer that Latin America sees Cuba as a normal state to have relations with. It sees itself as fighting crime, not with with guns, but of taking the profit, using economic instruments and politics. I mean, the drug wars killed over 50,000 people in Mexico, and the cartels are thriving. And you know what? The Mexican newspapers said over $10 billion was washed, laundered in the U.S. just for the Mexican cartel in 2011. So why not investigate the U.S. banks that are washing all this drug money?
Oh, indeed, Jim. One of many, many dirty secrets too few people know about. One reason that the drugs stay illegal. Oh, I hate that term. But one reason why it's criminalized to use certain drugs. You know, not tobacco that will kill you a lot deader than marijuana ever will. But the designated illegal ones. Well, the banks make a fortune on this. The money is laundered in the big banks, and not just in America. But this stuff gets washed in other countries as well. It's a shocking. The U.S. prison system, the prison industrial complex thrives on the fact that drugs are illegal. And, you know, the poor and minorities, blacks, Latinos, they're the ones that get thrown in. I mean, they all should be free. They shouldn't be in prison. But we have a thriving industry, the prison industry, and the money-washing, laundering industry. That's what illegal drugs are all about. Even Milton Friedman, the right-wing extremist, thought it is absolutely crazy to keep drugs illegalized. He wanted them legalized decades ago. One of the few things I agreed with him on, Jim.
Yes, I think that's very important. And Steve, this Summit of the Americas meeting, I think it's all over, because essentially what the Latin America government said, if Cuba is not recognized member at the next session, we're not attending. This game is over. And that means that the U.S. will lose out on its only existing forum for dialogue and negotiations with Latin America. And the inflexibility and the lack of economic initiatives that the U.S. goes to this meeting, it's pathetic. I mean, Brazil came, the president of Brazil, Dilma Rousseff, came to Washington with a set of proposals. And she said, look, you know, with this lowering your interest rates to such a degree that American money is flooding into Brazil, it's overvaluing our currency. As a result, the cost to our industry has priced out our manufacturing products. You've got to put an end to it. And she was ignored. Here's a country of 200 million people, leading country in Latin America, a member of the BRICS, and Washington refuses to deal with a very simple adjustment to say, look, we are in this together. We want to cooperate in dealing with the economic crisis. Let's see a way in which we can balance our relation. No, nothing. Obama gave a smile. Let's take a photo together, put it in the newspapers, and talk about a successful meeting. We signed some cultural agreements, all the insignificant, trivial stuff. And that's the story. What Washington is more interested in is sending having the Latin Americans join in the war on drugs. And Brazil said, no, thank you. We have a big a trade agreement coming up with China, and we're working out trade agreements in our neighboring countries, so we'll see you later.
Oh, well, and Brazil, of course, is so important because it is a big country. It is no small stuff. You know, one of the BRICS members, China, Russia, Brazil, India. I mean, those four together will match any other economy around the world. You brought up China, Jim. For all of the faults that China has, imagine the difference that strikes me so much. America bullies and wages imperial wars, threatens, it just shoves other countries around. You know, either do it our way, or we're going to hit you with sanctions. We may bomb you. We may do everything. China approaches other countries with economic growth, with economic investments. They invest money. They help grow the economies. I mean, that's a great way to make friends. Eventually, China is going to have a huge number of friends around the world, all the ones that America lost because they don't want to put up with this bullying and threatening anymore. And why would anybody want to put up with that? China comes in with open arms. Well, I would say that's a very positive policy to have.
Well, not only that, but I just read an article in Science magazine where they said, a windfall for science and technology in China. China is going to double its government programs for science and technology, research, design, and product. And here's the U.S. with a budget five times the size of China's military budget, five times bigger, and China is tripling its financing of science and technology, while the U.S. is cutting back, and the Republicans are talking about eliminating some of these government agencies. The Chinese are moving ahead in science. They're moving up the value ladder. You know, everyone says, "Well, they're making Walmart products. They're cheap." No, China is moving up the value chain. They're making a high value goods. They're introducing robotics into the productive process. They're raising their skill levels. They don't want workers just confined to monotonous, repetitive work for hours. They're recognizing that the future is in producing skilled workers and high-tech products, and we're going the opposite way. We're producing 95% of the new jobs that are being created, whatever is being created, is in low-paid service jobs. So we're moving in the opposite direction. Our school systems are absolutely atrocious, especially in science and language skills. Is occupying more of the time is not reading books to advance knowledge. It's playing video games. I mean, we're producing a generation of idiots.
Boy, are we ever, Jim. I've got an article all written. I haven't gotten out yet because it's not time sensitive, but it really gets into this and the deplorable state of people in America, this state of ignorance. They just don't know what the devil is going on. You compare them to people around the world, and they have a much greater awareness of big issues that affect their lives, and Americans are really so ignorant of this important stuff, and it goes down to the fact that, well, our educational system is just worlds different than the way it was decades ago. The one I grew up in an inner city that, my God, I mean, I had teachers that taught. I mean, anybody, if they put their mind to it, could do well and get into college and move on from there. And things were affordable. And the whole world is turned on, well, the American world is turned on its head now. It's completely different. I mean, I went to inner city schools, inner city Boston. All the schools I went to don't exist anymore. I don't know what the devil took their place. I mean, they tore them down many years ago. And I don't know what the kids get. The city, whether it's Boston or Chicago, New York, any place, they don't care about these kids. They just want to push them through to nowhere. And that's right. They end up in a nothing job, earning nothing, just barely scraping by. And America concentrates on taking care of its 1% elite or so, and waging imperial wars. And other countries more enlightened, concentrate on growth and cooperation with other states. I think there's a bad ending coming from America. I just hope America doesn't blow up the world in the interim, Jim. That's what I worry about.
Well, certainly the negotiations with Iran. Iran is going into the negotiations with no preconditions. They're very amenable to compromise and discussing their enrichment of uranium. They're nowhere near producing a bomb, nor is there any indication they're interested in weaponized nuclear program. And Washington goes in and sets the parameters. They say, look, first thing you got to do is end your enrichment program. Second, you got to dismantle your laboratories that you spent several billion dollars in building. Thirdly, you have to allow inspectors to go in and out of whatever offices and laboratories you have. We want to know the names of each and every scientist connected. Now, I mean, these are preposterous issues. First of all, you can't stop enrichment of uranium. This is ridiculous. 120 countries in the world enrich uranium. Why pick on Iran? You don't go in dictating if you're serious about getting to a rational resolution of this issue. So I think Washington has set conditions, especially in consultation with Netanyahu, to make these negotiations fail. I think they're running through the motions to say, look, we tried, it didn't work. And the media will eat that up. But in fact, even the Europeans said this was a very constructive first meeting. They had a very upbeat appreciation. Now, the Europeans bend like they're like marshmallows when they get a bit of pressure from Washington. But we have to intervene in this and say, look, the Iranians are eminently reasonable. They've put on the table the whole issue of of peaceful uses of enriched uranium. They're willing to lower the level of enrichment. You need 90% enriched. The maximum, they have some enriched uranium at 20%. Most of their uranium is at 3%. So even if they just continue what they're doing now, they're very far off from creating the level of uranium that can be made into eventually into a bomb. So we're dealing with all kinds of issues that are false issues. And what we should do is sit down and say, look, let's end the sanctions to Iran. Let's lower the price of oil as a result of the increase in supply of uranium. Let's sell goods to the Iranian market. There's several billion-dollar market here. They need to upgrade their technology in the oil industry. We could make some sales there, increase. Instead, we have this enormous cost that we've put into the Persian Gulf. We got the armada there. We have troops stationed nearby. More military aid to Israel, etc. So it's all part of this dark ages. You know, Steve, one of the things we used to talk about, what would we do with early retirement when we go from 62 to 55? We thought with automation and production, life would be a combination of 25 or 30 years of work and then a time for leisure and enjoyment of culture, travel. Instead, we're going up to 70 years old for retirement. Work till you die. I mean, this is worse than the Middle Ages. This is the Dark Ages. We go to wars on false pretexts. We have a new doctrine of work till you die, if you're lucky to get to work. That's the joke.
Boy, is it ever, and there's a new Republican plan. It won't pass this year for sure, but I mean, they want to hammer Medicare more than the Democrats, and they also just want to slash the devil out of food stamps. You know, the most vulnerable people, that they rely either on food stamps or food banks if they have them in their communities, and if they don't have either one of these, or ideally both, they will starve. They can't get enough to eat, and the Republicans want to take this prop out from under them, and at the same time they want to raise the military budget. What angers me the most, Jim, is why public anger hasn't surfaced in America before this. I mean, real public anger, enough to end the imperial wars. I just wrote about how Vietnam ended. I mean, public anger sustained, finally got through to the Congress, and they cut off the funding. The way to end wars is you cut the funding. Without the funding, there are no wars. That's how Vietnam ended, and it happened. Not because of the courage and determination of the Vietnamese so much, even though they were embarrassing us. It happened because Americans, by the many thousands, sustained protests. One in Washington, the biggest in Washington, I think, went up to 500,000, came out protesting the Vietnam War and all the other things that went on the home front, plus the military also very angry about going over there and getting their heads blown off. And the Congress got the message. Cut off the funding, the war ended. The wars can end today, very simply, if Congress cuts off the funding, but they won't do it, and they won't do it because people don't have the backbone enough to get out on the street and say no more. When? That's what bothers me, Jim.
Well, I think you're right, Steve. Unfortunately, one of the big dynamics for social change was the black uprisings in all the major cities, over 120 mass protests, some of them pretty aggressive, put the issue of social justice on the agenda for American politics. It literally buildings were burning two blocks from the White House at one point. And that was a major impetus. And today, black politicians have been bought out, people like Obama. They talk to the people and they work for capital. They work for Wall Street.
Oh, indeed.
And the trade unions are in the pocket. They're going to raise $100 million for Obama.
Shocking.
And he's done nothing for working people.
Shocking. Oh, we are out of time, Jim. I wish we could continue this. Do I ever agree? And there's no Martin Luther King around today to really inspire people to do the right thing. Jim, I look forward to getting you back next month. I'll send you an email. Oh, my goodness. You leave me breathless after our discussion, Jim. Just tremendous. I look forward again to another one in May.
Okay, Steve. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you so much. Join us this weekend.